welcome to a new season of To Homer and Back, the official podcast of StreakingTheLawn.com. We're excited to start a new season with the new football season coming up. My name's Pierce. I've got some esteemed veteran podcast colleagues with me. Caroline, how's it going?
Hey. Good. Hey. What's going on?
Oh, you know, just reading about fantasy football and getting ready for this weekend's collegiate season. Paul, how are you?
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Yeah, glad to have you both with me. We're going to talk about the upcoming season for the Hoos. Certainly a lot about the first game, but we've got a lot to talk about, I would say. It's been a while since we've gotten together and thrown around our thoughts and dreams and ideas. We have a new coach. We have a new quarterback. We have new uniforms.
Wait, what?
We have diamonds in the end zones again. I'm a big
Caroline fan. Just woke up from a 3-month nap. None of this is
real. Yeah.
You should.
This is all new to me.
A blog where you can catch up on all this news. It's called StreakingTheLawn.com.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Why don't we get right into it? On a scale of Qdoba to Cold Stone, with Qdoba being an obvious zero and Cold Stone being a 10 out of 10, how excited are you for the new season of Virginia football, Caroline?
Oh, man. I'm going to put it at, like, a Bodo's 8. okay. Pretty excited about it. It's just exciting to see. It's a new feel, and I think everyone can agree on that at least. Like, whether or not you are super stoked about Bronco coming in, or if you, however you feel about the uniforms or getting rid of Ventures of Cavman, which, you know, whatever, fine, okay, cool. But I just think there's a great vibe around the team right now, and so when you look at social media, which they have been so good at, it's hard not to get excited because you see, most importantly, the players are buying in to what Coach Mendenhall and the staff are trying to bring to UVA, which is a winning culture. Like, they're starting from the bottom and their goal is to win. And I am fully supportive of that goal.
Awesome. Paul?
I am a heart attack inducing double scoop of Cold Stone. mark your calendars. Today is the day that Paul is more excited for something that is about to happen in Virginia sports than Caroline Darney. that has not happened in God knows how long.
That's very true.
But this is, you, if you were drawing up, if you just asked me for a list, Paul, what are all of the things that you want to hear a new coach say, see a new coach do, both in terms of programmatic, culture building, team building, sort of philosophical things, and then practical, what does the offense look like? What does the defense look like? What does the strength and conditioning program look like? I would not have been able to draw something that made me as happy as everything I've seen for the last 9 months.
To be fair, when they said air raid, Paul just lost his mind. So
yeah, I woke up in like a cold sweat. It was
graphic. No, I know what you mean. I think you, that's well said. I am also excited. I'll go with an 8. I'll let you have your 10 out of 10. I for the reasons you just said, I totally agree. I think it seems like a great fit. It seems like the perfect approach to rebuilding. I think there's always been a lot of talent in recent years, and so there's definitely a lot of things for fans to be excited about, and it does feel like a fresh start. It feels like they're doing everything right to get people to come back, to pay attention. And to be excited. And yeah, I mean, I've been looking forward to this Saturday for weeks or months, really. And I can't tell you that's been a recent, like, level of excitement for season openers. Yeah, like, obviously, I always care. I always watch. I'm always looking forward to it. And, you know, we're always undefeated in the off season. But it does seem like there's certainly new energy to the start of the season, for sure. Why don't you guys share a little bit more, maybe more in depth, about your impressions of the new staff? I think we're all obviously optimistic when Bronco was hired, and I think everybody had a favorable view of the hire. But now that we've seen how he's approached the summer and you know, the practices and naming a new quarterback, et cetera. What are your overall impressions? And Paul, why don't you go ahead and start?
Yeah. I've tended to think that there are three basic kinds of head coaches. You've got the general manager, CEO type head coach, the sort of prototype being Mack Brown at Texas, that isn't necessarily renowned as an X's and O's guy, but surrounds himself with good people, delegates, and sort of is just the face of the program, almost sort of a figurehead. You've got the X's and O's guys, of whom, you know, Nick Saban would probably be the example, the most hands-on with one side of the ball, that they are developing a particular set of strategies for a particular strategic way to approach game day. Every down of every game is something that they focus on. And then you've got sort of the recruiter and emotional guy that knows how to play to a team's the wants and strengths of individuals. Mm-hmm. Virginia has had at different times one of those three. That Al Groh was unfortunately the first kind, Mike London was unfortunately the last kind, and I'm not really sure who would be the sort of the X's and O's coach. But for me, Mendenhall is the best of each of those three. And that's not something I knew before he came to us from BYU, but listening to how he's approached each of the things as the sort of the CEO organizational type, he has seen the step-by-step, we need to make this apparently inconsequential thing perfect. I need to delegate, not for the sake of delegation, but for work, you know, efficiency of work and getting buy-in from all of my coaches. At the same time, this is somebody that developed, basically created the 3-3-5 defense with Rocky Long at San Diego State. Like this is what he is bringing, the odd man fronts, the exotic blitz packages. Mm-hmm. That's his X's and O's development. And then from the emotional motivator side, things like the new uniforms with the numbers on the helmet, the number ceremony last mm-hmm. week, just making, he is motivating by making it clear what the expectations are and what it's going to take for guys to reach that. And blending all three of those talents, that's hard. And that is rare. And I've been absolutely blown away by the strength in such disparate areas that I've seen from him so far.
Well said.
Well, yeah, Paul's answer was really good. I'm going to try and follow that. No, I 100% agree with what Paul's saying. What I really like about the staff that he has surrounded himself with is the way that they're doing, like exactly what Paul's saying. Like, I really, really, really like the you do it right or you do it again mentality. And that's something that I think a lot of Virginia fans can get on board with when you look at games in the past that were lost under Mike London for things like, I don't know, 12 men on the field or Khalik, get off the field or interceptions with very small, you know, short amount of time left in that Carolina game. Like the little things like the mind mistakes, the false starts, like that seems to be the thing that the practice and earning your right to even practice where you have to pass all these pre-tests, if you will, mm-hmm. Earning the numbers. Like these kids now know like everything that they get to do is they earned it, and it's not a right. It's something that they've worked hard towards, even something as simple as the number, which before I've read a lot on Twitter the last couple of days since the number ceremony where that actually really meant a lot to the guys where it's like, they're so excited about what number they chose and like, you know, what they get to do. And no one was upset when they didn't get if someone sniped number one, you know, no one was like, oh man, like holding it against them. They're not trying to trade numbers behind people's backs. Like it didn't work like that. And I love seeing that. And I really, really like Frank Wintrick has stood out, the strength and conditioning guy. I love the videos. Yes. I love that they brought Diamond Dallas Page in, because I think that's something that they realized the guys were really into. So it shows that they're listening to the team and bringing in things that they're interested in, also supporting that and making those extra steps to, I mean, when he came in the room and the guys lost their mind, like it was just so exciting to see them get so amped over something. And I think a huge piece that often I overlook, and so maybe other people do too, I don't know, is the benefit of having someone like Ruffin on the coach Ruff on the coaching staff.
Sure.
Just from hearing the stories about him, and he just seems like I'd love to just shake his hand and meet him and say, hey, because he just seems like a good dude. And if you keep having like these guys that will support the players, and you see the pictures of the quarterbacks, Benkert and Johns and Brewer, going to Coach Beck's house for his daughter's fourth birthday party. Like, right. It's not just them saying the stuff, they're actually doing it. Like, it's obviously getting through to the guys because they want to go to a four-year-old's birthday party. You know what I mean? It's just like, I've really enjoyed seeing that part of the team. And I think that's something that maybe it's because this group's better with social media, and that might be the only difference, but I think that they're really doing something different with these guys. And I can't wait to see it translate on the field because their attitudes are so much more improved.
Yeah, I think when you talk about wanting to combine what you want in a coach and how a lot of different coaches excel in one part and not another, and certainly you can make up for that in assistant coaches and whatnot. I think approaching it almost from the excitement level of a hire, you know, correlates to it. Like what really excites you in a hire is going to be that young guy who's going to be a good recruiter and has a lot of potential and bringing a lot of energy. Maybe what doesn't excite you in that hire is sort of the X's and O's, whether it be an established guy or a guy just known for running things in a very business-like or workman-like type of non-flashy way. I think it's a good combination that we see in the reaction to Broncos hire. The perception of Bronco as a coach is a good mix of the both, and that ties into him being a mix of a good recruiter, a guy who's connecting with the players, but somebody who's also going to go in a very purposeful way, not make any rash decisions, do things his way, a planned out process that he has by his design. And I think that's what we've seen over the summer. It's funny to hear from the players, or, you know, you ask people who know guys on the team, you know, are they having a good summer? How's it going? They always say, oh, I mean, they worked hard before, but they're just, all they ever say is this is on a different level of work, of the work that they're putting in. This year. And that's cool to hear for sure. I think it speaks to that purposeful, like everything you guys were saying about how much work they're putting in, how much effort they're putting in, and what they ask of those players. I will say, to be 100% honest, like the numbers thing and just like the things here and there that I totally approve of, and I totally love that the team seems to love it, and I'm all about Bronco doing exactly what he wants. But were another team's coach, particularly like a rival coach, doing this episode, I would be just dogging on it at every opportunity. I would be so skeptical. It just strikes me as a goober. And like when it's your goober, that's great. But I think it opens a lot of doors to ridicule or more just teasing, or whatever. Because there is a lot of stuff that just sort of makes me chuckle. Like, okay. And again, like, I'm no input. And I just want to see them win football games. If they're happy about it, they're my team. And so I support whatever makes them happy and whatnot. But I can definitely take a step back and see a lot of these things with like a little bit of skepticism to it, but good nature.
Yeah, I'm used to that. I'm a Houston Texans fan, so I get JJ Watt.
Oh God!
If JJ Watt played for any other team, I would hate him.
Exactly.
But he's our goober.
He's the best. He is the best. Oh my God, I love him.
He's our goober.
JJ, call me.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though, Paul. Like, there's always going to be that type of feel. Like, when it's your guy, you're going to embrace the gooverness. I think that's the best way to put it, is Bronco and his staff. I mean, look at their tweets and their, you know, they're, like, jumping around and making the goofy V-double saber hand signals. But, yeah, I mean, if the kids like it, the recruits like it.
Oh, I love it.
I know.
I love it.
Let's take a step back. I mean, Tony Bennett is kind of a goober in a different way. He's not the exuberant, outgoing goober.
Yeah.
But the way that guy can talk about the six different ways he's going to shut down a pick and roll, like, that's he gets fired up just in ways that we don't necessarily. I think he's much more private. Mm-hmm. Even though Mendenhall, all of the reporting is that he's a fairly private person, he is a bit more willing to have this sort of gooberish, outgoing.
He's definitely put himself out there. Yeah,
right. And where, you know, Bennett is a little bit more deflective. That when somebody starts to talk about him and what makes him tick, he sort of always deflects it back to the team. But let's be honest, anybody who is going to UVA is a little bit of a nerd. There is not an alum of UVA who wasn't a little bit of the weird kid in high school, because that's what the academic standards attract. So I think, you know, it's all about finding fit between a coach and a program and a university. It's why Mike Leach has been good the places he's been, that, you know, Texas Tech and Washington State, these kind of looked down on places, that he's able to sort of rally, get the people to rally around, look, I'm weird, but embrace the weird and you get results. We've done that with the basketball team, and I think doing it for what sort of Bronco brings to the table, we're, I think, lined up to see very positive results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's, that's really funny you mentioned Tony Bennett, because I was going to say, well, yeah, the nerd in Tony Bennett that I loved is when they played the softball game and he was trying to figure out ways to, like, make that more defensive by, like, like, he thought with the, you know, different bats, they'd have more of a defensive game on their hand. But anyway, but I think one of the biggest things that people need to cage before the season starts as fans is that I have compared this hire to Tony Bennett. And I think that's a dangerous thing to do just right off the bat because of where we all hold Tony right now. And so the idea of it being like an off the radar hire where they've got this high character guy, just everyone, it's his first year. You know what I mean? Like,
if we hold him in the same light that we held Tony, you know, 5 years ago, like, hold him in the same sort of expectations of this program was pretty much broken down.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what you can do.
I think this is the long-term run. Exactly. I'm not expecting us to be in the college football playoff this year, but
next year, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
If that happens, certainly a lot of that will have to do with our next topic, which is Kurt Benkert.
Boop.
Name is basically
was promised.
It's like a slant palindrome, which I love.
Speaking of nerds,
right? I would hope that maybe his middle name is also Benkert, so that he could be Kurt Benkert, Benkert. But Bob Law's Law Blog. I don't know. Anyway, what are your impressions with the new quarterback? Obviously, is a cannon for an arm. I like how they were. The recent reports have been like, yeah, he's mobile, but he's definitely not, you know, as mobile as some of those BYU guys were. Like, he's not Taysom Hill. He's not trying to run out of the pocket when he doesn't need to. But I'm excited for him. What are your impressions?
I was going to say. Oh, sorry. No.
Go ahead, girl.
I'm excited. I will admit I was Team John's to start because I like a little bit of the, he's the senior, and honestly, I wasn't all that mad at him last year. I thought he had a bad offensive coordinator or didn't necessarily get the calls that would help at the right times. So I'm going to be political and nice about it. But I think that his reaction to Kurt Benkert being, why do I say his whole name?
Because it's fun.
It's fun. Kurtie McKurtzalot being selected as QB1. I think his reaction is a huge part of how successful this team is going to be. And I know that sounds cheesy again, but that's my role. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited about Kurt. I think, like we talked about, the air raid and the big arm, like the video of him like throwing a football through a basketball hoop like 100 yards away and on his knees, whatever. It's great. I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about being aggressive on offense for the first time in probably a while. I like that his extra mobility, quote unquote, should help alleviate some of our offensive line depth issues. But I think that Matt Johns' attitude around the whole situation will be a huge benefit to this team in the long run, because there hasn't been, he's looked at as the leader in that locker room, and he did not miss a beat. He kept that, you know, head in the air. He's the guy, he's there for everybody. He's there ready to help Kurt Ben Kurt right out the gate. I think that's going to be huge, because I think Kurt's going to do a great job.
Cool.
Yeah, the Coach Tujay, I think it was last week, maybe it was a couple days ago, tweeted a hype video that somebody did about Taysom Hill for this upcoming season, and it included highlights from his when he's been healthy the last couple of years. Watching that video, Benkert is not Taysom Hill,
right?
Because like Christian McCaffrey is barely Taysom Hill. Like he is a very different kind of athlete.
Right.
And just from the very brief clips that we've been able to see for practice so far, and from watching Banker highlight videos and the spring game at ECU the last couple of years, he doesn't have anywhere near that kind of mobility. I think he is more mobile than Matt Johns, and you don't need to have basically a running back with an arm to still run an effective read option, but I really do think we're going to see something more similar to what BYU ran last year once Tanner Mangum took over, pulling more on those air raid routes than the spread to run that had been sort of the early Bronco offense.
Yep.
So given that the two things you have to do in an air raid offense to be effective are not throw interceptions and be able to throw it deep, it makes sense why Matt Johns isn't going to be the starting quarterback. Yes, he has been a fantastic leader for this team for the last several years, but he led the NCAA in interceptions last year. And that is not entirely his fault, as Caroline just said. But
it frequently points out.
Yeah, it is what it is. So if nothing else, the ability to stretch the field and use some speed to hit receivers going deep, that's something that Benkert has at least better than Johns has. So I am excited to see not just how Benkert does, but also what offense they choose to use with his strengths.
Yeah, the guy obviously makes throws that the other guys on the roster can't do. From everything we've seen and watched, that it's a pretty clear-cut case on him being the starter. And I think they went about it the right way in terms of any sort of political niceties towards Johns. But obviously, this isn't the staff that really would care about that much. And I think Johns earned getting all those snaps with the ones and making sure that he got a fair shake towards being the guy. But at the end of the day, it looks like Benker's just got the tools to be at another level. And so hopefully we'll see them utilize those tools sooner than later. Although he hasn't played. It was funny to hear in his media talk right after it got announced, they asked him, what's the last game you've started? He was like, well, I guess it would have been our last game in high school. We got crushed.
Yeah. And, he laughed about it.
That media day. Yeah, he seems like a social enough guy, which is neither here nor there. But, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see him play for sure, and hopefully for a couple more years. What's funny is when you sort of read between the lines, I think there's been some rumbling that if they announced a backup, it would be Brewer and not Johns. Which is certainly surprising, having seen them both play. I'm more comfortable with Johns, but obviously it's a new offense. Brewer's got some tools for sure. Maybe he's made some significant growth, but I'm just skeptical. Let's say it's game 5 against Duke. I was having this exact hypothetical with Ransbacher the other day, but it's game 5 at Duke. The Hoos are down 4, and Benkert twists his ankle and he's done. It's the fourth quarter. We have the ball on a last, you know, 5-minute drive. Is Brewer really the guy who's coming off the bench there?
And no,
if you announce that he's the backup, I think you got to throw him in. I mean, you wouldn't announce it otherwise if you didn't want him to be that guy in that situation. But, I mean, obviously, I think all three of us are going, no, we want Matt Johns. And correct me if I'm wrong. No, I mean, seriously.
I want Matt Johns right. in that situation. I think his experience with the team and his leadership abilities and they listed him as an or. It's a Brewer or.
Yeah,
or
yeah it's the beauty.
I think that's a political or a nice thing. But that's just my opinion reading through the lines there.
Yeah. I mean,
thing with UCLA.
Yeah.
But if they get to the 45 and there's one last throw to win the game, put Connor Brewer in.
Give it to Oz.
Instead of the wounded moose that lands the 15, like, let's get the ball to the end zone.
No, I mean, you just call the annexation of Puerto Rico. The quarterback is.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of the Duke game, let's get some quick thoughts on the schedule. Obviously, the Oregon is the daunting out-of-conference. We've got Richmond, Connecticut, and Central Michigan as the other out-of-conferences, all winnable games. And then they've ended with 8 straight ACC games. Some look winnable, but really none of them looks like a gimme. I guess you could go with at Wake Forest looks like the easiest game on the schedule, but it's an away game, and UVA hasn't won an away game since 2012. So no stretch of the imagination would I put that as a gimme. So what do you think for the schedule? I mean, does it look hard, easy? We can talk about our predictions down the road as a whole, but give me some quick impressions on the schedule.
It's weird. Like, we having having 3 home games in a row in October and then only 1 for the rest of the season. Like, it's just there's – I don't know. That was the first thing that struck me when I looked at it. I was like, why the hell are we at home for so long and then on the road for so long? But that's not – the other thing is I don't think we will know – where this team really is until the morning after the UConn game.
Sure.
That all, yes, Richmond is a very good FCS team. They're ranked number 4 in the FCS. They made it to the semifinals last year. Hopefully we'll take care of business on Saturday. And frankly, going to Oregon, we won't know anything about this team if we all get the result that we expect from the Oregon game.
Mm-hmm. Speak for yourself.
Fair enough. Right. That I really do think that UConn game, both in terms of getting another out of conference win that puts us in a position to go bowling, but also that's a fairly even matchup from sort of preseason, and will tell us be the best barometer for are they ahead of schedule, behind schedule, were things worse than we thought before the season.
Darns, what are your thoughts?
Agreed. I do think it's weird with the chunks of home and away. Not a fan. But also agree with the UConn game being a big barometer and also a huge swing game when it comes to possible bowl game situations.
Sure.
I think looking at our ACC schedule, it's a little bit more manageable than the last couple of years. Our schedule in general is a lot more manageable than the last couple of years. I like having the Carolina, Louisville, Miami all at home. Those will be probably the 3 toughest games in my opinion with ACC games. So it's nice to have them at home. And I think we should be able to steal one of those. I'm not going to pick which one just yet, but, I don't know. But then I look at it and each game looks like, oh, I don't know. Oh, I don't know.
For sure.
I think the Duke situation with Cirk, I feel really bad for him injuring his Achilles again, out for another season. Their quarterback.
Care. He plays for Duke. Wah, wah.
It's true. I know. But definitely don't feel bad about the kids in Miami that got kicked off the team for breaking rules. 2 starters on defense. Their defense is looking a little weak. So I think that becomes a lot more manageable of a game, especially being at home. And for the random reason that I know it's not Al Golden anymore, but it was the only team we were able to beat in the ACC. So yeah. I don't know. Georgia Tech struggled last year, and I keep panicking about the triple option, but then I remember we don't have Mike London anymore, or Al Groh.
Well, and he beat Georgia Tech a couple times, including last year. Yeah, but
that's true.
I know what you mean.
But I feel like also we got blown out more than we succeeded. Yeah, definitely.
I'll tell you what. I don't like the fact that we're playing them right before playing the Hokies. I hate that. That's my least favorite thing on the schedule.
At least they're playing Notre Dame, though.
Yeah, but playing Georgia Tech, you're preparing for that stupid, gimmicky, bullshit option offense all week.
No, now we got to put the explicit E after our podcast.
Looking at it, I just hate option teams.
Yeah, I hear that, yeah.
Anyway, it just throws another wrench into the lead up to that. We never play well, as far as I know, after. I don't think any team plays well after they play Tech, Georgia Tech, that is, so. I don't know. I don't like it, but who knows how good the Hokies are going to be. They've got a new coach too, as we all know. So
we'll see.
Let's move on to our next topic. Our next topic is I'm really excited to throw out there. It's a new segment for your podcast. It's called Defend Yourself.
I'm terrified.
We need theme music.
Defend Yourself, we'll work on that, is where I attack you. Defend Yourself. This week's Defend Yourself is about our power rankings, which I've got in front of me here that you all and I also submitted to ranking the ACC teams. And I'm going to throw my first attack at Paul. Paul, you have Virginia sitting at 7th in the ACC, which is notably 4 spots higher than where Caroline has.
I told you.
Higher than Virginia Tech, a team we haven't beat since my first year of college, which was a long, long time ago. Paul, defend yourself.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't care. Will has already run me through the ringer for this. As soon as I submit him, he goes, "What the hell is wrong with you?" Normally, I'm the numbers guy. My picks usually pretty much track, some sort of analytics, whether it's S&P or F plus, whatever. I told it like that is for down the road at this point that I am riding high on what I've seen. I think there is a chance for some things to break our way based on I think the schedule potentially could play in our favor. The circ injury. I've said to folks from the beginning of the year that getting to 3-1 in conference isn't just big for bowl eligibility. Is there early season proof that what the coaches have been saying is working?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That if they start 1-3, it's like, God, did we do all that crap in the offseason for nothing?
Yeah.
If they're 3-1 and then all of a sudden they go to Duke and it's their first conference game when ACC game, especially ACC road games have been terrible for them. Duke is coming off consecutive road trips to Northwestern and Notre Dame, starting a freshman quarterback. Could, if all of a sudden they're 3-1 out of conference and win that Duke game, is it off to the races? Now, Carolina and Louisville are both really, really good teams. Pitt is a very solid team that is on the rise. I don't know. I'm feeling it. I'm going to be crushed. I know it because I can't have nice things. As the growing up the son of a Bills and an Orioles fan, like I should know that by now. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
All right. Well, Caroline, your power rankings make more sense to me. I would ask, would you drop Duke down a little bit since the quarterback injury, or would you keep them? You've got them as 7th ahead of Virginia Tech, Virginia in the Coastal, and ahead of some garbage Atlantic teams.
I would drop them. Like Paul said, I mean, having them start a freshman quarterback and Cirque was just such a big returning piece, I think, for them, and not only with skill but experience. Mm-hmm. So I think losing that, I mean, we know how it goes. Like, you lose a guy like that, and that just hurts. I would definitely drop him.
Gotcha.
I thought about putting Virginia higher. I really did, but I chickened out. I should have channeled my inner Paul and gone with my heart.
Well, don't worry, I've got something to attack you about, which is your defense of the Cavman intro videos.
Yes.
You've been defending it all week, especially since I think it got confirmed, but at least people seem to think that they're done with no more cartoons to open our football games. You were upset by that news. That is an absurd opinion. Defend yourself.
All right. Yes. Yeah, so I'm disappointed. I will miss it. It's the nostalgia factor for me. I do think in the last couple seasons specifically, it's gotten kind of, I see where it's cheesy, whatever, fine. I would have loved if they revamped it or like changed it a little bit, where I really enjoyed back in the day when it got down to the point where Cavman had the opponent on the ground or stuck or whatever, and he'd look to the side wherever, and you had Tiki Barber there doing the gladiator thumbs up, thumbs down move. Oh, those were the best. And it would really get, I think a huge part of when it loses its luster is when there's nobody in the stands cheering for it. So when you have a student section that's there early and they're stoked and you skewer the Hokie or you get after the duck from Oregon or whatever, it there's just something really like cheesy and childish but exciting about it that you're like, yeah. And just the coordination of the horse running out, and when Cavman gets bucked off the horse, that also diminishes the whole situation. But you know, it's a one-time thing, Virginia Tech, okay? Quit bringing it up. But yeah, and I get it, but I'll just kind of miss it. But I'm
you
sure
think
whatever.
They just make fun of us for our bad football team, but focus on the mascot. Football team's not bad anymore. We're good. Well, I think you adequately defended yourself there, both of you. So,
thank you.
Well done. Let's go some rapid fire, quick take opinions on a few more topics before we close up shop for the evening. New uniforms. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Is it silly that there are helmets that we only wore once under the Mike Glendon era that we're never going to wear again? is it necessary? Are you fully in support of it, Paul?
Yes, thumbs up. It is taking me a little while to get used to the numbers, but hearing how big a deal it is, the numbers on the helmet, mm-hmm. hearing how big a deal it is to the guys to have gotten their numbers this week, the intentionality behind Bronco saying, these numbers are going to be close to their heart, that the existence or non-existence of the numbers has been such a big deal to this team, mm-hmm. That I think it really does make sense. I'm coming around to it. I'm glad that they're going with the Quail era throwbacks for the primary home jersey. Mm-hmm. I'm all in.
Cool. Darns.
Thumbs up. Of the specialized helmets from last season, I would like to see the black graphite, gray graphite once again. Yeah. Those are the ones I'd like to see again.
I like those, but God, I loved the white
with the chrome.
Oh, they were pretty cool too.
The orange, I did like all three. And they wore those a couple times. I loved those helmets.
Cool.
I'm really sad that we probably won't see them.
But thumbs up.
Flashy.
Girls' opinion, love them. They're fantastic. They're slick. They look sharp, but they're not boring, but they're classic. I love them. Cool. Thumbs up.
I will also like to point out to Bronco that the heart is actually in the center of your body. So
slightly left of center.
No, it is not. It is in the center of your body. It's just turned slightly left anyway.
Nerd.
Doctor,
see, nerd.
That's true. All right. We need any more rapid fire. Upset prediction for the season. So, I mean, a game that Virginia is going to win that they won't be favored in. So, Caroline?
Oregon. We're going to shock everyone. Because no one's going to see it coming. It's going to be the – oh, there's Bennett. She agrees with me.
Yeah.
It's going to be the no one expects it. And nothing to lose.
You're cut off. You're cut off. Wiley, what's your more realistic upset pick?
It's unfortunate that it is an upset pick, but Georgia Tech, they're ranked ahead of us in any sort of, you know, rank every team in college football kind of rankings. We had our most success against the triple option when we were running odd man fronts under the 3-4 under Al Groh. Bronco has done well against those sorts of teams with his odd man front defense. I think that's we've tended to have strong alumni support in Atlanta. So I would say Georgia Tech.
All right, and I will say Pitt, actually. And the reason I'm picking Pitt is because, well, we're coming off a bye week. It's a home game. Certainly we could win. But I want to emphasize that I think Pitt is going to be very, very good this year. I won't be surprised if Pitt wins the Coastal over UNC. That wouldn't shock me whatsoever. But I do think UVA is going to beat them on the 15th, and I think that's going to be a big upset if that does happen. So I'm going to pick that because of the bye week. And because we tend to play Pitt pretty well, so I think it's going to work out for the Hoos in that one.
Whatever, next, Oregon.
Yeah, or the Oregon game too. Listen, I'm going to root for UVA, obviously. But, you know,
and I'm going to sound like a genius.
We went out to LA and played USC real well under Mike London. You know, and I've seen it. That is a possibility, but no, come on. All right, next rapid fire. You can even just use one word if you want. Are we going to make a bowl game this year, Caroline?
Yes.
All right, Paul?
Yes.
All right. I mean, I'm going with my heart, but I'm saying yes, too. Cool. All right, prediction for the Richmond game. Throw out some scores. Throw out a couple guys you think are going to shine for the Hoos, make people talk about them the next day. Who are fans going to be talking about after the Richmond game? Paul?
I'm going to go 38-14 Hoos. The new offense works under Bankert. The new defense is well-calibrated to shut down sort of a traditional attack like Richmond brings to the table. And Andrew Brown lives in the backfield, living up to all of the postseason buzz. Good preseason stuff. Buzz, I mean.
Right, right. Darns?
I'm going to go 24-7. And I'm going to say that Oz has a good game, and Quinn Blanding is going to come out with an interception.
Nice. I'll go something like 31-21. I think it is going to be relatively close. I think Richmond's probably going to have some big plays that keep them in it in the first half. But I think the Hoos will win. I don't think it's going to be like nerve-wracking. But it will, the score should be closer probably than the second half dominance will make it seem. I love the Oz pick. Obviously, Benkert, Brown, and Blanding are all hopefully going to have big roles. So I'll go with David Eldridge because I think he's going to have a long touchdown. I don't think most casual fans know exactly who he is. And I think he's going to be a big-time deep threat for Benkert just to chuck it to all season. And I think he's probably faster than some of those Richmond guys. So it should work out for him on Saturday. So, yeah, unless you guys have any parting thoughts, I think that's a good place to end, and we'll talk next week, see what happened in the Richmond game, get some more optimistic predictions for the Oregon game. And until tune in, games at 3:30, it's on ESPN3. Stay tuned to Streaking the Lawn for some more preview and some rapid reaction. Until next time, go Hoos.